That's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with Hitler revisited, a totalitarianism and a brutality that is naked and unprecedented.
And increasingly elaborate reasons were given for going to war.
They had kids in incubators, and they were thrown out of the incubators so that Kuwait could be systematically dismantled.
And only then did Congress vote in support of that first war, Operation Desert Storm.
What's going on in the Gulf?
Any new developments, Mr. President?
No, I had a long talk with King Fahd just now.
While all this rhetoric was being played out on the surface, behind the scenes, the logistics of the war were being planned. Bush made the decision to send American troops to Saudi Arabia to defend the kingdom, but King Fahd was deeply worried about the presence of so many American troops on Saudi soil. This, after all, is the Islamic Holy Land, and there's a great deal of discomfort with the presence of so many infidels, as they're called, non-believers, in the Islamic Holy Land. So Bush sent his Secretary of Defense, Dick Cheney, to Saudi Arabia to persuade Fahd to allow the American troops in, because that was the only practical means of driving the Iraqis out of Kuwait, and Bush understood that. Cheney brought with him satellite photos, which have never been made public, allegedly showing that Iraqi forces were on the border of Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, poised for attack, in order to persuade Fahd that he was in danger and that American troops had to be sent immediately.
But Fahd had another offer of support from an unusual source.
The volunteers who went from Saudi Arabia to Afghanistan in the 1980s to fight the Soviet Union with American support. Their leader was a man named Osama bin Laden, a Saudi citizen with close ties to the royal family, who had been working with the CIA in Afghanistan to drive out the Soviet Union. And he was trying to persuade the royal family to allow his forces to defend the kingdom against Saddam Hussein and not rely on the Americans. And so it took Cheney a great deal of persuading to get Fahd to agree to allow the American troops in.
I made to the king at the direction of the president, and a meeting with him in Jeddah on August 6th included specifically that we were prepared to deploy a significant force to the kingdom, sufficient force to deter further aggression. Secondly, that we would stay as long as we are needed. And third, that we will leave when we are no longer needed or when we are asked to leave. And those, I think, were important considerations in the king's mind.
And it was this last condition, that American troops leave as soon as the fighting in Kuwait was over, that convinced King Fahd to accept the American offer and to reject the offer from Osama bin Laden. But when President Bush announced the victory in Kuwait at the end of February 1991, the decision had been made already not to invade Iraq, but to contain it from outside.
None of us want to move forces into Baghdad or frankly, we don't want to have any more fighting.
But the Americans would have to remain in Saudi Arabia to enforce the containment strategy. And so Fahd was faced with the permanent presence of American troops. And it was this repudiation of the U.S. promise that turned Osama bin Laden from an ally of the United States into a sworn enemy of this country.
The bodies of five Americans killed in a bomb attack in Saudi Arabia.
Car bombs exploded today outside a United States training facility in Riyadh.
A truck bomb exploded at the gates to a U.S. Air Force facility in Saudi Arabia this evening. There are deaths and there are scores of casualties.
Early this morning, two U.S. embassies in East Africa were the target of bombs. One ripped through the embassy in Dar es Salaam, the capital of Tanzania, at about 3:40 a.m. Eastern Time. Almost simultaneously, 450 miles to the north, a blast tore through the U.S. embassy in Nairobi.
The USS Cole was attacked in Yemen. Al-Qaeda militants rammed an explosives-laden boat into the ship, killing 17 sailors.
Thank you. of today, we've had a national tragedy. Two airplanes have crashed into the World Trade Center in an apparent terrorist attack on our country.
Obviously, 9/11 had many causes and many roots, but I think if you try to understand what exactly led us to that terrible tragedy, you can't avoid the conclusion that oil had a big role to play.
As Commander-in-Chief of the United States military, and as a person working to secure this country, I take the words of the enemy very seriously, and so should the American people.
President Bush and his advisors like Karl Rove tell us repeatedly that we should take seriously the words of Osama bin Laden.
I recommend the book to you. If you've got $17, I recommend you go to the bookstore, go to Barnes & Noble or Borders, and pick up a book called Messages to the World. It's the collected writings of Osama bin Laden. He's a pretty smart guy and sophisticated. He wants to dominate the world. And the way to do it is one simple three-letter word, oil.
If you read Osama bin Laden's words, his fatwas, you cannot escape seeing oil as lying at the root of Osama bin Laden's war against the United States. And so in our alliance with the royal family, which is rooted in our addiction to Saudi Arabian oil, we have in fact provided the fuel for Middle Eastern terrorism.
Repeat after me. I, George Walker Bush, do solemnly swear.
And this is my greatest complaint with the Bush administration. President Bush and Vice President Cheney had a remarkable opportunity in 2001. They could have chosen that moment. It was the perfect moment to say, we are at a turning point. We're in a new century. This is the time to plan ahead for the end of oil abundance.
The future is achievable if we make the right choices now. But if we fail to act, this great country could face a darker future, a future that is unfortunately being previewed in rising prices at the gas pump and rolling blackouts in the great state of California.
Because 9/11 was such a earth-shattering event, we tend to forget what Bush focused on in those early months of his administration.
What people need to hear loud and clear is that we're running out of energy in America. One thing is for certain, there are no short-term fixes.
Reality is the nation has got a real problem when it comes to energy.
He came into office at a time when there was another energy crisis.
California is at ground zero of the energy crunch, suffering through rolling blackouts and soaring electricity rates.
Whoa, I thought this was only supposed to happen in California.
Big League Baseball was stopped.
And we had kind of a rolling blackout here.
Power company pulled the plug again on some businesses there and in Iowa and Illinois.
There were blackouts and long gas lines in many parts of the United States and high prices.
America faces a major energy supply crisis over the next two decades. The failure to meet this challenge will threaten our nation's economic prosperity, it will compromise our national security, and literally alter the way we live our lives.
And so immediately, in one of his first acts, President Bush created the National Energy Policy Development Group, the NEPDG.
President Bush made a big new push today for his energy agenda with Vice President Cheney as his point man.
They began work almost immediately after taking office, issuing their final report, the National Energy Policy, on May 17, 2001.
I am really pleased with the work the Vice President and his folks did. This is a very optimistic look at America.
This is the major energy blueprint that continues to govern American energy policy today.